In the morning, today's daf in Avodah Zarah is Yud Aleph. We are on the very top of the Amud. We're starting with Agadata. Wonderful Agadata regarding Unklus. Unklus is the Targum. When we're reading Chumash and we're reading Targum on Chumash, so it's translated into the Aramaic. The first translation of the Torah. The Gemara, it's interesting. The Gemara Megillah talks about Unklus translating the Torah. Addition to that also, the Gemara Megillah over there, in the beginning, Daf Gimel. The Gemara over there talks also about the Septuagint, the Targum that was translated into the Greek language. Just as a point of contrast and interest, the Targum that's done by where they forced the Torah to be translated into Greek. So the Gemara over there goes over the famous episode where there were 70 chachamim placed into 70 different rooms and translated the Torah. Each one of them made the same translation, so as the Torah comes out to be one consistent translation. But the Gemara views that as a very gloomy day. In fact, one of the fast days that are mentioned in Megillas Tanis is designated for that, for the translation of the Torah into Greek. The Gemara views that as a bad thing. It was not a good thing. If I remember correctly, in terms of the date on the calendar, it was the 8th day of Teves. Okay, hopefully I'm 8-9. Yeah, it was the 8th day of Teves. Mentioned Megillas Tanis. And meanwhile, Unklus also translated the Torah, and obviously it's viewed as a very positive thing. So, you know, yesh v'yesh. Some translations are not good, some translations are good, and obviously the job is to try to make a distinction between one translation and another translation. Anyway, okay. That's just by way of introduction. The Gemara over here, twice today, we're going to be treated to some incidents regarding Unklus. So let's start off with our first one. Our first one of today, I'd say, is very famous. I think most people know this story. The story is told over a number of different times, but here's the Gemara in Avodah Zarah, very top of Yud Aleph Amud Aleph. Unklus ben, kolonimos igayer. So Unklus converted. So in other words, he lived during Bayis Sheni, which is going to be evidently clear in the course of our Gemara's discussion over here today. He's a convert, meaning he himself converted. And he must have been some sort of very important person in the Roman world, because as we're going to see now, Caesar is sending people to get him. Now, to get him to do what after they get him, the Gemara doesn't tell us. But clearly he wasn't happy. Right, Caesar wasn't happy that Unklus converted. So Unklus bar kolonim basigayar shadar kesar gundad de rame abasrei. So what the Caesar did is he sent out the first troop of Romans in order to get him. And mashchina b'kray. And what he did is he drew them in with psukim. Meaning, so Unklus quoted a number of psukim. Obviously, he was a master in terms of the Torah, and he must have been able to. He was also must have been an excellent communicator, and he was able to communicate certain ideas through the quoting of psukim in the Torah. And they converted based on Unklus's persuasion, powers of persuasion. So iguyer, so they converted. Hadasha degunda deramay achrina. Caesar sent a second troop of soldiers to get Unklus abasrei. Amalu lo temale velo mide. And his response was, I'm sorry, and Caesar warned the troops, don't say anything to Unklus, don't engage him in conversation. He's very persuasive. Ki ava shakla va'azle, and as they were taking him, amar lu emelucho milsa ba'ama. So he says to them, Unklus says to them, look, I'm not going to talk to you about Torah, I'm just going to say something stump. Let me just make a comment. So, nifura nakat nura kame pipura. And pipura la duchsa la hagmona lakuma. Now, I don't know what all these different types of political positions are, but I certainly know the following. Meaning, each one of them is a higher step than the next. And basically, you know how it works in politics. Basically, if you're serving somebody who's superior to you, so you're holding the fire for them, you're holding the light for them. So each one of these holds the light for someone who's greater than them. And then you finally get to the kuma. The kuma is the king. That's the melech. And so the hegemona holds it for the kuma. The hegemona, by the way, that we do know, meaning we've heard of him before. The Gemara in the beginning of Ksuvas talks about the hegemon who unfortunately takes liberties with newlywed brides. That the Gemara in the beginning of Ksuvas over there, which is why the dates of the weddings are done on Wednesday and specifically chosen Wednesday. Anyway, but the hegemon we've heard of before, but whoever the other are, each one holds the life for someone who is greater than him. And then kuma nakanura mikame inshi. So, but does the king hold it for anybody else? Of course, the answer is a rhetorical question. The answer, of course, is no. The king doesn't hold it for anyone else. He's a king, meaning he's on the top of the food chain. Amri lei lo. So they said no. A rhetorical question, but they answered it anyway. In other words, no, the king doesn't hold it for anyone. So Amri lehu. So now Unklus basically set them up. And he said, oh, that's right. Kadosh Baruch Hu naka nurakam Yisrael. And meanwhile, what Kadosh Baruch Hu does is he holds the light up for the Jewish people. Dichsivit quotes, and obviously he's quoting this week's Parsha. And that's how these things work. Vashem alech lefneim yomam. Kadosh Baruch Hu's walking during the daytime, holding the fire for us during the day it's with a cloud, and at night it's with a fire, and he's holding the light for us. So the Melech Malchei Hamelachim, the King of all kings, is holding the fire for us. Unklus obviously showing them that, look, in other words, the relationship that we have with our king is a different relationship than you have with your king. Your king, he doesn't serve anybody. In other words, everybody serves him. Meanwhile, HaKadosh Baruch Hu, we serve HaKadosh Baruch Hu, but he also serves us as well. Igar Yerkulu, they all converted. Hadash Adu Gunda Achrina Abasre. He sent out finally the third troop of Romans. Amalu lo tishtau midi behadei. Now Caesar's instructions over here, you can imagine his frustration. His instructions at this point in time is nothing. Don't say anything to him. Don't engage in any kind of type of conversation. Don't talk about the weather. Nothing. I'm sorry, demanacha pischa. So as he's now being taken out of his house, dragged out of his house, so the mezuzah on his door, so he goes to, now I'll say kiss the mezuzah. I think the way you and I think. But osiv yadei Allah. But he puts his hand on the mezuzah. And this is it, meaning this is a source in the Gemara that describes a minhag, obviously, and it's an old minhag of putting your hand on the mezuzah. Gemara doesn't make any mention of kissing the mezuzah, kissing your hand, but anyway, but putting your hand on the mezuzah. So v'amaluhu mayhai. And he says to them, what's this? So amrle emalan at. They said, well, we don't know. why don't you tell us? So amrlehu minagusha olam. And so he says, oh, it's funny you should ask. Let me tell you about this thing called the mezuzah. Minhagu shel olam melech basav adam yoshev b'mifnim va'avadav mishamrim osav mibachutz. Again, contrasting a king down here, meanwhile, melech malchei hamelachim. When it comes to a king down here, so he's in the interior of the house and he's got guards all around him. V'ilu HaKadosh Baruch Hu avadav mibifnim v'hu mishamrim mibachutz. And meanwhile, when it comes to HaKadosh Baruch Hu, so the servants are on the inside and he is on the outside protecting. Sheinemar Hashem yishmor tzeitzcha v'olecha me'atav v'ad olam. HaKadosh Baruch Hu is our protector. Igayer. And as you probably would have guessed, so they also converted as well. Sulo Shadar Basre, at that point in time, Caesar gave up. Caesar decided to send nobody after Unklus anymore. Vayom Hashem la shnei goyim bevitnech. Rivka is pregnant. She doesn't know what's going on. She's having an uncomfortable pregnancy. She goes and asks for some counsel in terms of what is happening. And HaKadosh Baruch Hu tells her the following. You're going to have two goyim bevinech, meaning the first piece of news that she received. This is the first recorded ultrasound in history. So HaKadosh Baruch Hu says, you're pregnant with twins. So I'm reviewing on Marav, I'll take her goyim alageyim. So in other words, the Korean ksiv over here in the pasuk is that, although we pronounce it goyim, but it could be read as geyim. Geyim meaning great individuals, two great individuals. Ze Antoninus v'Rebbe. So this is a description of Antoninus and Rebbe. We already spent yesterday describing at length the interesting the affectionate relationship that Rebbe and Antoninus had with one another. Antoninus obviously being the leader of the Romans, Rebbe being the leader of the Jewish people. And they had a very, very special relationship to one another. And they were both very wealthy. We talked about that also a little bit yesterday. And they had all these different types of vegetables. And they had it year-round, right? In other words, they didn't just have these vegetables on a seasonal basis, but they had it year-round, apparently also imported. Now, why are these particular vegetables so important as part of their diet? Darmamar, it's no mechatech, ochel. Tznon is very good in terms of cutting up the food that's inside of you. And chazer is mahapech maichel. And the chazer churns it inside of you. And kishos marchiv ma'ayim. And the cucumbers, so what they do is they widen the intestines. So basically, these particular vegetables are excellent for the GI tract, and so they're really good in terms of digestion. Now, the Gemara is bothered because there's a statement by Rabbi Yishmael, actually, I'm going to see this twice in our Masechta, that cucumbers are bad for you. They're like swords in your stomach. So, Lokasha, the Gemara says, this is not a difficulty. Big cucumbers versus small cucumbers. Now, I'm guessing, because Rashi doesn't tell me. So the big cucumbers are bad for you and the small ones are good for you. Okay, but I'm just guessing. I have no idea which one's which. But anyway, but as Tosfos points out over here, the Chiddush is not that they had these vegetables, meaning that, you know, these are vegetables we're talking about. The Chiddush is that they had so much food and they needed digestive aids. And so basically, just to see, like almost like a small little window into the world of Rebbe and Antoninus, is that they had so much, you know, there's so much food and so much diet that they needed digestive aids, like what we just described. Okay.
Why is their greatness described in terms of
Gashmi? Yeah, right. Right. It's an excellent question. Meaning, right, for Rebbe, obviously the better praise would be his Ruchnius, but in other words, I guess despite the fact that he was so Gashmi, he had so much, right, the Gemara says elsewhere that Rebbe's Mechayev all the wealthy people in the world. Meaning that all the wealthy people in the world who say, look, I had too much wealth, I couldn't learn, so they're going to point to Rebbe Yehuda Anasi and say, look how much wealth he had, and meanwhile he was able to learn. So, okay, that's you'll forgive me, I don't remember where the Gemara was, but the Gemara says that. Yom HaLeid V'Yom HaMisa. Okay, talking about the day of birth and the day of death. So of the king, these turned into pagan holidays. So Mechlal D'Rav Meir Sav V'Loshna Misa Sheyesh Basrefa V'Loshna Misa Sheyim Basrefa Pachi V'Lavos Kochavim. Now, according to the Chachamim of our Mishnah, it does not matter whether when he died, they burned the material possessions of the king. Meaning, there was a practice, there was a rite, R-I-T-E. There was a practice back in those days where when a king died, so they would take his possessions and they would burn his possessions as a way of showing how important this king was. No one else should get benefit from his personal possessions, right? Nowadays, our minhag is not to do that. We take the king's stuff and we put it in a museum. And we don't have kings nowadays here in this country, but right, basically, but you get the point though. So that's what they would do back then. And according to the Chachamim, whether there was a burning, there was a possession burning, or there was no possession burning, they turned it into a idolatrous festival. What I just said is all true, but not according to the opinion of the Chachamim, but rather that was the opinion of Rav Yehuda. Mechlal de Rabban Savri Sefer Chukahi. Now the problem is that where does that put the Chachamim? It puts it now on the side that burning the king's possession is a pagan rite. It's an idolatrous practice. Meaning that according to the Chachamim, when does it turn into a pagan festival? Only when you see the king is dead, and then they burn his possessions, that's part of the pagan practice. Okay, and what now becomes the problem, according to the Chachamim, Vatanya. The Gemara, the problem is that we have the following, it's a Tosefta in Sanhedrin. The Tosefta in Sanhedrin is going to tell us that we, the Jewish people, by right, are allowed to burn our king's possessions, and it is not considered an idolatrous practice. The Brisa says it clearly. Sorfin ala malachim v'lo midarchei amori. It's not an idolatrous practice, says the Brisa. Now, v'ichukehi, now, if what we just learned together in the Gemara of Avodah Zarah, based on the mission that we just saw on Zion, based on our Gemara here on Yud Aleph, if what we're saying now is that part of the pagan idolatrous practice according to the Chachamim is to burn the possession of the kings, now it's considered chukas agoyim, an idolatrous practice of the goyim, and therefore we're not allowed to mimic it. And I'll show you the Tosfos in just a moment, and I'll go so far as to say, Tosfos says it, I'll go so far as to say, even if we had the practice first, meaning even if we were the ones to burn our king's possessions, if they took it and they turned it into idolatrous practice, so then we can't do it anymore. And meanwhile, the Brisa says in the Sanhedrin, the Tosefta says that we're allowed to do it. So, anan hechi sarfinan. So the Gemara asked the question now point blank. So how can we do it? The Torah says that you're not allowed to copy and emulate the ways of the idolatrous practices. So the Gemara says, fine. So what we're going to have to do is we're going to have to re-examine our debate. As far as our machlokas is concerned, there is no question that burning the king's possession is not an idolatrous practice. Oh, but they still do it. But they do it not as an idolatrous practice. Ella, chashivu sahi, v'hacha v'hacha miflagi. The Gemara says, look, all we're looking at right now is burning of the king's possessions. It's just simply a benchmark. It just simply tells us, Did they like that king? Did they honor the king? Is that king important enough where they're going to turn into a pagan festival? Oh. So the burning of his possessions now is going to be serving as the benchmark to see whether or not the king was important to them. According to Rav Meir, whether or not the king's possessions were burnt, their king's possessions were burnt, is no indicator as to whether or not it's a pagan holiday, yes or no. It always is a pagan holiday, according to Rabbi Meir. And meanwhile, according to the Chachamim, no. Only when they burn the king's possessions, that in of itself is not the pagan practice. It's not an idolatrous practice. But you know what it is? It serves now as a simon. It now tells us, oh, they really like that king. They really do, and they like that king so much, they're going to turn this into a pagan holiday. That's all it is. It's just simply an indicator. Gufa, the Gemara goes back to this point, Sarfin, that we, the Jewish people, are allowed to burn our king's possessions, and it is not considered an idolatrous practice. The Gemara quotes the pasuk from Yirmiyahu. The Navi tells the last king of Yehuda, Tzidkio HaMelech, although it all is lost, meaning now we're talking about Churban Bayis Rishon, destruction of the first base of Mikdash, and at this point in time now, Yechaniah was already sent into exile, meaning they pretty much knew that the Bayis Rishon is coming to an end. But the one consolation that the Navi gives Tzidkiyahu is that you're going to die a natural death, and your possessions are going to be burned like previous kings of the Jewish people. And not only is this done for kings, but this was also done for Jewish leaders as well. Meaning, even in subsequent generations, when we didn't have a king per se, but we had a nasi, we had a leader, so the same thing was done for the nasiim. Umahim sorfim ala malachim, and what got burnt? Mitasim v'klitash misham ha-maiseh. I'm sorry. Mitasim v'klitash misham. Beds and any personal belongings to the king. Umaiseh shemes Rabbi Gamliel zakin. Rabbi Gamliel had died. V'sarv alav unklos hager shiva manitzuri. And Unklus Hager burnt, so in other words, so now historically, we're able to put Unklus together with Rabbi Gamliel Zaken, which means that it was during Bayis Sheni, the end of Bayis Sheni. So Shiva Manitsuri. So he burnt 70 silver coins. Now the Gemara says, now wait one second, Amar Mayin Sofen Aleim Mitasim Klitash Misham. Now the Gemara says, I don't understand. Even though there is a legitimate practice of burning the possessions of kings and leaders, but what are we doing burning money? So the Gemara says, Ema b'shivim manitzuri. So just one small correction. They didn't burn the coins. He burned the value of Rabbi Gamliel's possessions that were valued up to 70 manitzuri. Apparently that was a lot of money.
What is the purpose of that?
Again, it's a sign of respect. It shows us that this leader is irreplaceable. Even though, of course, we're going to replace him. But in other words, it's covered. No, not his money. His personal possessions. Personal possessions. Now the Gemara says, now a couple more things get destroyed. So what we do is we take the animal of the king and we're ma'akir. We rip off the legs. Now, if I said this in terms of an animal, I know it sounds painful. I know it sounds right. It sounds cruel. I'll get to that point in just a moment. But if I could sub out just for a moment, I know, I'm modernizing. But if we could sub out the animal and just replace it with a car, basically we'll take the wheels off the car. Okay? So that the car, no one could drive the car anymore. Okay. Now I know the Gemara is talking about an animal. So ve'en bo mishum darche amori. So Amra Papa susharach avalos. So Papa says exactly, but we're talking about the king's personal horse. So you like my car analogy. You don't have to like it, but that's basically the car analogy. So in other words, we're taking off the bottom hooves of the animal. No one's able to ride it anymore. Now, you're wondering, which is the correct question to ask. This is Baal Tashchis, it's Tzar Baalei Chaim, and all this is okay. So Tosfos on the bottom is bothered by this as well, and Tosfos says, yeah, it's fine. The Im Tomar, second to last Tosfos on the Amud. Okren al Malach, and the Im Tomar, Vaymai lo parach vayikat Tzar Baalei Chaim. Right, so obviously we're taking the legs off the animal. Now when I say the legs, I mean the bottom portion of the legs. I'll make that clear in just a moment. It's Tzar Baalei Chaim. Now Tosfos says, don't even ask me a question about Baal Tashchis. It's not Baal Tashchis, it's Tosfos. Because once I'm doing something for a purpose, it no longer is a violation of Baal Tashkes. Honoring the king is a purpose. So therefore, Baal Tashkes, Tosfos says, that doesn't even bother me. Ella. Hava kamao, tachrichin shal me'amana, el tzar balechaim echutar. So, but it's tzar balechaim, but it's painful. You're causing pain to an animal. How is it permitted?
Why not put the baby in quarantine so nobody could use it?
Okay, v'yesh lamer, I hear you. V'yesh lamer, deshani kvod ha-melech, shu kvod l'chol Yisrael. So Tosfos over here writes that we're honoring the king. Honoring the king, he's a public figure. As such, it's like honoring the Jewish people. The honor that we give to the public is going to be doch. It's going to override Tzar Baal Chaim. Okay. So, obviously, what Tosos here is basically saying is that if we could like put together Baal Tashkes and Baal Tzar and Tzar Baal Chaim, like the threshold to violate Baal Tashkes is not that high. Meaning that for to violate Baal Tashkes, as long as there's some purpose to it, so then Baal Tashkes is not it's not going to be an issue. But for Tzar Baal Chaim, Tosfos clearly, in other words, he says that the threshold to violate that has to be higher. So Tosfos argues, yeah, it is higher over here. Meaning because when we're honoring the king, it's public, it's covered a rabbim, and that and seemingly what Tosfos is saying, and only that is going to be overriding Tzar Baal Chaim. Now, whether Tzar Baal Chaim is Nisa D'Oraisa or Nisa D'Rabbanan, the Gemara debates that issue elsewhere. I'm pretty sure the Gemara in Chulin. Okay, we'll get to it soon enough. Anyway, that is how it can be done and still not be a violation of neither Baal Tashkes nor Tzar Baal Chaim. Continuing in the Gemara, we're on the very bottom, Yad Alpha, Mid Alpha, the Hematara Lova, Atanya, Iker, Sheish, Ba, Trefa, Aser. Now, if we're ripping off the legs, now, if you rip it off too high, meaning if we're going now, if we're going proximal to the body, right? A few medical terms I've learned over the years, okay? Distal is towards the extremities, proximal is to the body. So if we're moving now proximal to the body, so and you rip it above the knee, so proximal to the body, so that the animal now is a trefa, and that you're not allowed to do. If it's, however, distal, in other words, towards the extremity, so that would be okay. In other words, the animal is not going to be rendered a trefa. Now, Rashi over here writes, right, the last Rashi on the Amud, I'm reading it. Even if I'm not getting benefit from it, I'm not allowed to render an animal a trefa. Now, why not in general? Not clear. Tosfos on the very bottom is very bothered by this Rashi. But anyway, for our purposes right now, let's just leave it with the Rashi. Rashi says that you're not allowed to cause an animal to be a trefa. Yeah, right. It could be. Although we're not, what bothers Tosfos is that we're not talking about karbanos right now. So,
but it's a potential karbanos.
Okay, fair. It's fair. Okay, could be Baal Tashkes. Okay, whatever. However it works, that's what Rashi says. It. I quote it. We're going to go on. Iker sheish ba trefa, also v'shem ba trefa muter. Ve'ezu iker sheim ba trefa. So the Gemara says, now, when we're taking off the leg of the animal, what will not render it a trefa? We turn now to Yad Alpha Amud Beis. So I'm an Asher, Prasusam, an Arkuva Lamata. So in other words, when you're taking the leg off, but you're doing it from a distal position, in other words, away from the knee, distal. So the Gemara says, Tirgama Rapapa Ba'agala Hamoshechis Bekara. Now, obviously, we're not talking about horses over here, because whether a horse is or is not a trefa doesn't really concern us. Meaning, it does, obviously, Tzar Baal Chaim, Baal Tashkes. But in other words, in terms of eating, we're not eating horses. Clearly over here, we're talking about foods that we can eat. I mean, animals that we can eat. We're talking about a cow. How is a cow a personal possession of the king? So the Gemara answers very simply. Rav Papa answers, Be'egla ha-moshechet be'karim. It is the cow that is pulling the wagon of the king. Okay. So anyway, what did we learn together? That when you're burning the king's possessions, and we're talking now about our kings, meaning Jewish kings, so one is allowed to do that, meaning you're allowed to burn his personal possessions. Okay. I mentioned briefly a moment ago, I'll highlight it here, the Tosos on Yud Alef Amud Alef, the long Tosos, the third one on the Amud. Ichuk Ehechi Sarfinan. So Tosos says over here like this. In other words, this is a much lengthier discussion of the Isser and the Torah of Chukosem Lo Selechu, that we're not allowed to follow their practices. So Tosos over here makes a very basic distinction. I'm just distilling the basic point of Tosfos. And that is, Basically, what we could do is we could take it into we could put it in two different categories of chukosam lo selechu. There is idolatrous practices of the non-Jews, and then there are just silly practices that they do that does not have an idolatrous basis. Tosfos writes, I'll read the key lines of Tosfos. It's halfway through the Tosfos. Lekach perish ri detrei gavne chukei hava. There are two different types of chukim of the goyim. Echash osim l'shem chok lavodes kochavim, the echash osim l'shem das hevel v'shtushalayim. One is where they're doing it as an idolatrous practice, and the other hevel v'shtus, just silly non-Jewish practices that don't have any idolatrous basis. And basically, now I'll summarize the remaining part of Tosfos. Basically, if it falls into category B, the non-idolatrous practices, so then as long as we have done it first, as long as there's a basis for it in Chumash, like the burning of the king's possessions, meaning it's in Tanakh. We just quoted Pesukim in Yirmiyahu. So when we have that practice, so as long as they don't turn it into an idolatrous practice, even though they do it, and it's using Tosus's language, Shem das heva v'shtus shalahem. Okay, they do it as well, but as long as we had it first and it's not an idolatrous practice, so then we're fine, meaning we can continue doing it. If, however, even though we had it first, if they turn it into an idolatrous practice, so then we can't emulate it. Now, even if we had it first, even if there's a basis in Chumash for it. Okay. And the reason why Tosfos says that is because he's putting together a bunch of Gemaras, our Gemara over here, the Gemara in Sanhedrin. Anyway, see, that is Tosfos' general point regarding Uva Chukosam Lo Selecho. Obviously, there's much, much more to discuss, but we're going to go on in the Gemara. We're on Yud Alpha, Midbeis Yom Takalacha Zekano. We're talking about other days which served as idolatrous days. So we're basically talking about where the king received some sort of special grooming, where his beard was shaven, and on top of that also, his hair was left in a particular style. The Gemara describes it as a blurus. Now, you're going to hear it a lot in our Masechta, in Avodah Zarah. It was a pagan, idolatrous hairstyle. If I can help you with a visual, if you like those old kung fu movies, so you know that the hairstyle where they have just the hair growing out in the back and they braid it, so it seems similar to that kind of hairstyle. If I can just give you a visual. So Yom Taglacha Zekano. So what the Mishnah describes is where the beard was shaven, and then the Mishnah goes on to describe the blurus. Now, how do you read the Mishnah? That was one event, or the Mishnah was describing two different events? And the Gemara asks exactly that question. Is it that where the beard was shaven and the hair was left to be grown in this idolatrous practice? Oh, Dilma, Yom Tegalach Zekano, the Ha'avaras Bluris. Or is it the shaving of the beard and the leaving of the blurus, meaning Rashi points out that at the end of the year, Rashi v'avars bluria solosof shana shemegalech oso bluris levada. In other words, they leave it, they let it grow for a year, and at the end of the year, they're going to shave that as well as part of their idolatrous practice. So, is this a one grooming event or are these two separate grooming events? So, Tashma didn't need to have eyes. The Gemara quotes a brisa that seemingly indicates both. Yom tegalach zekanova hanach bluria sov. So that's the first way we described it. This is a single grooming event, or Yom Tegalach Zekano v'Havars Bluriasav, or the day in which they shave and they leave the back of their head to grow out long, and then when they shave the back of the head, that's a second event. Basically, the Gemara is saying we don't know. Meaning, the Brisa seems to give us indications to both ways. I'm Rav Yehuda Mishmo Oda Cheres Yesh Lahem Berami. There was another pagan holiday. In other words, in our Mishnah, we described, this is the Mishnah going all the way back to Daf Zion. So in our Mishnah, we described now that there were three major Roman holidays. Sorry, the Mishnah on Ches. Okay, I was off by Daf. That's a good reason why I couldn't find it. So the Mishnah on Ches Amud Aleph. So the Mishnah on Ches mentioned that there were three major Roman pagan holidays: Kalanda, Saturnia, and Kartisim. And then we already described the Genusia Shemalachim, the birthday, the yurt site, Okay. And then we talked about some of the more minor pagan holidays and days in which they had these grooming events. In the meantime, now, the Gemara is going to treat us to a really, really tragic holiday that the Romans had, and it was done once every 70 years. The Gemara describes. So this is a holiday that they had, a pagan holiday they had once every 70 years. It was almost like a play that they did, where they had one person on top of another person, on the shoulders of another person. The person on the bottom was chigir, he was lame, or in other words, either he was actually lame, or they played out this play in which he looked lame. And now the person on the shoulder, so they dressed him, they put the coat on. Now when I say the coat, right, capital T, capital C, the coat, meaning the one that was worn by Adam Arishon, then taken by Nimrod, then eventually taken by Esav. Okay? So obviously over here in this play, if you have not figured out what this play represents, so I'll spell it out. The person on the bottom was Yaakov Avinu. He was chigir, he was lame. Yaakov fought with the angel. Yaakov was rendered lame after the right. His hip was dislocated, injured. And so the one on the bottom is Yaakov Avinu. The one on the top is Esav, wearing the coat that was taken by Esav, stolen by Nimrod, taken by Adam Arishon, and then, to make this just even more tragic and just more sick, so they took Karkiflo Shel Rabbi Yishmael, they took the head of Rabbi Yishmael, preserved. Now, I'll read the Rashi. Rashi says it, so I'm going to read it inside. Karkiflo Shel Rabbi Yishmael, Kohen Gadol. So he was the Kohen Gadol, Me'aruge Malchus Hayah. Now, he was one of the Asara Haruge Malchus. And Mitoch Yafya Nechnas, Beleid Bas Keser, V'Yivshit, Or Panav. So Rashi describes, the Gemara described this. We saw this back then in the Gemara. But Rashi over here, just giving a summary of the Gemara, describes how the daughter of Caesar saw his face, was taken by the beauty of his face, so they peeled it off of his skin, v'chanta ba'afar simon, and they preserved it. Shetei mekuyemes, v'lo yishtaneh. And then Rashi writes, v'adayin munach begins de romi. And it's still found in the Genazav, in the treasury, in the Roman treasury.
There's another story about his children were so beautiful and they're taken captive and they're put in the same room together.
That's right. That's the Gemara getting. So Rashi says, you know, at least he has on record that it's still there. But we go back to the Gemara now in describing this holiday. And they hung around his neck. Mikal reish zuzidepize. A weight that weighed 200 coins. And they put some sort of ornate jewelry around the legs. And this is what they would say. This was now the narrative that they gave towards this play. Sakhiri plastar, right? Sakhiri plastar. Rashi describing the word pizi is paz, meaning it's a precious stone. So, I'm sorry. Sarkiri plaster, Rashi, Cheshbon HaKetzin Kazavu, Nevuas Yaakov Shakra Levanov. The prophecy that was given by Yaakov to his children is a lie. La'achris HaYamim Shesofam LiGael Kazavu. Because they say they're going to be redeemed and it's not true, they're not going to be redeemed. Now this allows me to speculate. I bet you somebody says it, but if not, I'll say it for whatever that's worth. And that is, in other words, then that's why they did this, they had this play once every 70 years. Because remember, between Bais Rishon and Bais Sheni, so the Gaulus went 70 years. And there was that Nevuah that everyone was so concerned about. Remember the Gemara in Megillah? On Daf Yud Aleph, that there was this Nevuah that was given by Daniel, that in 70 years' time, so the Jewish people are going to be redeemed. And everyone was trying to figure out how to count those 70 years. Nobody knew how to count it correctly. But anyway, but the Gaulus, Bavel, lasted for 70 years, and then they were redeemed. So now, after Churban Bais Sheni, so basically what the Romans did every 70 years subsequent to Churban Bais Sheni is basically you're not going to get redeemed. And at the end of 70 years, they had a celebration celebrating, oh, you're not going to get redeemed, and you're not going to get redeemed. And that's why this particular pagan holiday was done once every 70 years. Back to the narrative of the Gemara. This is what they said during this pagan holiday. Achud Amarana Zayfana, the brother of our ancestor, meaning Esav, the brother of our ancestor is a liar. Anyone who sees this place sees it, and anyone who does not see it does not see it. Meaning, this is probably going to be a once-in-a-lifetime event. Meaning, most people back then did not live that long, and so this was done at once every 70 years. So basically, if you saw it now, great, and if not, then the chances are you're not going to see this again. And what good is it for the liar to lie and for the cheater to cheat? Meaning, again, they were deriding and they were mocking Yaakov Avinu. And then almost like a postscript, they give the following last line of narrative. Woe to the judgment, Rashi explains, the woe to the judgment of us. Meaning that in their heart of hearts, they also knew that this was all going to be temporary. And although they had the upper hand, and although they were celebrating the downfall of the Jewish people, but they knew that us litenes adin, that eventually they themselves are going to have to give judgment for what they were doing. So, Am Rav Ashi Yichshilim Pinla Rishayim. Now, Rav Ashi points out that if you look at the narrative that they give during this pagan holiday, and you read carefully, so you see that syntax, from a syntax standpoint, what they said was could be interpreted a little bit differently. Meaning what they were trying to express is that the brother of our ancestor was a liar. But they didn't say, Achua de Marana. I'm sorry, Zaifana Achuna de Marana. That's not how they said it. But rather the syntax was, Hasha de Amre de Marana. Zaifua Marana Gufe Zaifahu. It could be interpreted that their ancestor was the liar. Okay, well, what we call in English a dangling participle. Okay. Anyway, So, this was a Roman holiday. How come not mentioned in our Mishnah? Gemara gives a simple answer. It was not an annual event. Our Mishnah was only looking at pagan holidays that were annual events. Okay, so those are the Roman holidays. What are Persian holidays? So, you'll forgive my pronunciation, and not only that, but I know what's going to happen. I'm going to ask you if you heard of these holidays, and you're going to say no. So I know how this works. I got this part. I got down pretty well. My so mutrade turaske and mohanike umoharin hani de parsai de ramai. So now we've gone over the Persian holidays, Roman holidays, the Bavlai Mai, Babylonian holidays, mohanaki vaaknise bechanuni veeser baadar 10th day of Adar, Babylonian holiday. Okay, whatever that may be. There are five idolatrous houses, and they are Bais Baal Bebabavel, Bais Navo Bekursi, Tarasa Shebe Mefeg, Tzrifa Shebe Ashkelon, and Nashor Shebe Aravia. Kiyasa Ravdima comes in, Osifo Alayim, Yerid Shebe Ayin, and Bechi Nadvika Shebe Akko. Two more permanent idolatrous houses. Igida Amre, some say Natbara Sheba Akko. The last one, a slight deviation, Natbara, that was found in Akko. Rav Dimi Min Arda Masne Ibcha, Yerid Sheba Akko, Natbika Sheba Ayin Bechi. Okay, the Gemara over here takes obviously great pains in trying to give what they think is the correct version of these houses of idolatrous worship. Amle Rav Chanan Bar Rav Chista La Rav Chista, Mai Kvu In Hain. What does that mean? They're Kavua. This is the tradition that I received from your maternal grandfather. Meaning that they, because these are houses of worship and they are fixed, meaning that they pray there on a regular basis. And their holidays are considered annual holidays. In the exile, so the only day that's prohibited in doing business with them is only Yom Eidam Bavad, only the day itself. The Yom Eidam Namim Yasser. Now the Gemara says, even on the Yom Eid in the Gullus, is that prohibited? V'arav Yehuda Shar Le'Rav Beruna Lezvune Chamre, U'Le'Rav Gida Lezvune Chitim B'Chagasa D'Tia. On a certain Arab holiday, so there was dispensations, a term that were given out to various Amoraim to do commerce with them on these on the day itself. So the Gemara says, Shani Chagasa Titiato Dol Kviya. The Gemara says, yeah, but these Arab holidays, it's sporadic. These were not fixed holidays, meaning that the prohibition is only for holidays which were annually fixed holidays, and since they were sporadic, so therefore it was not prohibited. I'll read the Rashi, the last Rashi over here. Basically is bothered by the same thing that Tosfos is bothered by in the beginning of the Masechta, right? The question which has been bothered by the Rishonim is articulated by Tosfos on the first Amud of our Masechta. Perish HaKuntros Mishum Da'azal B'yom Edo Umoda Lavoz Kochav Mitoch Lashon HaMashma. Sorry. So V'kasha Amma Samchu Ha'olam Masis V'laseis B'yom Edo Ha'avuz Kochavim Imahem. Tosfos over in the beginning of the Masechta articulates the question very well. It's difficult. You know, we do business with them on the Yom Eid Avodas Kochav. Meaning, we seem not to be bothered by this Mishnah at all. Rashi over here also, obviously Rashi came before Tosfos. Rashi is the progenitor of the Balei HaTosfos. So Rashi over here is bothered. Rashi writes, Ein anu yecholun lahamid atzmenu melisa v'liten imahem shebeneihem. Anu yoshim arparnasaseno mehem. So Rashi says, look, it's just impossible for us to live otherwise. Meaning we live amongst the Goyim, and this is our business, this is our livelihood. And so Rashi says, we're just simply Ein Breira, there's no choice.
Maybe it's because Christianity is not considered.
Right, now that is a suggestion, and you'll notice that Rashi nor Tosfos makes that suggestion. Right. So V'od Mishum Yira. And Rashi points out also because of Yira. Yira may be synonymous with the term Eva. And again, in other words, if we prohibit ourselves from engaging in business on the Yom Eid, so it would lead to animosity, it would lead to acrimony, and that would not make for a good relationship. And again, it's the same basic idea in that it would be dangerous to us. So Rashi over here does address the question which Tosfos articulated in the beginning of the Masechta as well, and that is seemingly, we seem to be ignoring a lot of these Gemaras and a lot of these Mishnayos and these Gemaras, and so Rashi over here addresses this as well. Okay, we'll stop over here. Tomorrow we pick it up with the Mishnah on the bottom of the Amud.